Fun is boring. Choose funner. This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. And while I was there recently, I had a chance to play at the brand new High Limit Room, which has its own bar, slot machines, and high limit tables. I also got to dine again at the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. I hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2026. Welcome to the Vietnamese Podcast. I am here at Arrowhead Country Club in San Bernardino with current mayor Helena Tran. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. It's really special.
You're welcome.
Because I understand you're the first Vietnamese woman mayor of San Bernardino County, right? Or San Bernardino, the city.
United States.
Of United States.
Yes. And still is.
Wait. you're the first...
I'm the
woman
first
Vietnamese mayor in the United States.
Yes.
How is that possible in 2026?
Well, you tell me, because I did not know that either until after I won my my election in 2022. I'm the first AAPI elected official in the city of San Bernardino history. I'm the third woman mayor in the history of San Bernardino. Now, as the first woman Vietnamese mayor, yes, that's true for San Bernardino, but also really, truly for the United States. An at-large mayor.
You know, I do my research before I go into these things. I did not see this anywhere.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
All right. So I am fairly certain you didn't grow up going, I want to be in politics, right?
Absolutely not.
Can you tell me about that?
I grew up wanting to be a third grade teacher. Since a little girl, even to when I went to college, and that was what I was going to go for. That's because I had teachers and educators who really influenced me and inspired me. But life experience mm-hmm. and my journey ended up landing me in politics because, you know, who I met along the way.
So wait, did you end up ever teaching third grade?
No.
So you, what did you study in college?
So should I start? My beginning of
yes.
how I came to be and so forth. Daughter of refugee immigrants from Vietnam, right? And you're very familiar with that, with many stories in the Vietnamese community. My parents got sponsored to the U.S., San Diego specifically, 1981, and with my older sister in hand. And I was born in San Diego in 1982. And a family friend of ours said, you need to get out of this really bad part of San Diego and move to San Bernardino. We didn't speak English, so when we moved to San Bernardino, I would be first grade, elementary school not too far from here, and had teacher's aide who would help me transition my language and my siblings. So growing up here, humble beginnings, we relied on government assistance and all that. In high school, 17 years old, I was part of Key Club, which is a community service club. I met folks who were seeking volunteers on a campaign. It was a special congressional campaign in 1999, and his name was Dan Senna. And I ended up meeting my mentors on that campaign when I volunteered, just helping out. They're the ones who actually encouraged me to go to college, life skills, etiquette life skills, etiquette with my English speaking. And I got exposed to politics in the meantime, but still never thought I was going to run for office. I went to college because of their mentorship and encouragement. And I went to UC Santa Cruz studying to be a third grade teacher. But during that time, I was working for Sue Burnside, is her name. She's like my second mom in politics. She would have me go into different communities throughout California and even some out of state to help elect leaders into office or address issue bases in the community. I kind of got really drained from that because it was 24/7, 7 days a week. And this was even post-college. I'd worked for her for 2 years. Then I decided to come back home, San Bernardino. And I was going to say I was going to look for a job in the Bay Area, but couldn't find a job. So I went through a temp agency, Apple One, is here in San Bernardino, and they help you look for a job. They landed me a job in city government.
What kind of job were you looking for at the time?
I was just looking for anything.
Teaching, though?
No, not even teaching, because I didn't know what to do. I got out, I left college and I was working politics, but I was like, what? I just need to land somewhere. I need a job. So I resorted to a temp agency that helped me look for a job. I got landed as senior secretary to the HR director at City Hall of San Bernardino, mm-hmm. 2006. 10 years later, became the youngest director for the department.
Got it.
So I saw the bankruptcy that city faced and all of those things as a staffer. And then the thought of running came to my mind in 2014, just thinking, oh, maybe I should run for office. When I retire, though. Fast forward 2018, seeing a lot of politics and all of those things in the community and as a staffer and having seat at the table, seeing big picture, I then started thinking more, you know what? I need to run. So when I asked my mentor, Sue Burnside, should I run for council or mayor? Her response to me was, you know what to do. Go to the top. So I did. So when I left, I resigned San Bernardino in 2019, went to another city and worked for 3 years. And during that 3 years, I started pretty much organizing.
You know, when you're coming up working for the city as an HR person and you said director, you see a lot of the internal workings, right?
Yes.
And it can get really murky and cloudy in terms of like, wait, that's not right. That doesn't look right. And that can beat down somebody and overwhelm you. But instead you're like, I think I can do this, right? But what drove you to think that you can make a place like San Bernardino better?
My father, my mom, my parents. There's so many times I want to give up. I want to throw in the towels, like I'm done. I'm facing way too many challenges because I face a lot of challenges as staffer, as a young woman leader.
What kind of challenges did you face?
That I can't do it, that, you know, who are you to think that you can do this job or, you know.
These are external people, external forces?
External, just whatever challenges as a young leader moving up quickly. I think there's a lot of times like, you know, you haven't met so many years to be there. So why are you there? And I think it's always been challenging to try to always prove myself. Mm-hmm. But I'm reminded by my parents that, look, you're learning something. You're learning people's skills. What you're facing, these challenges, difficult people, you thank them. You're learning something. Figure out how to navigate. Figure out how to work through them or work around them or work with them, right? So I'm always reminded that. So even regardless of the difficult challenge that I face, I'm always reminded by my parents, you know, they came here with nothing.
Yeah.
They risked their lives to be here. What am I complaining about?
Mm.
My dad was supposed to die in Cambodia. In a campsite where he was blindfolded, digging his own grave, shot in the head until Red Cross came and saved him and reunited with my mom in Thailand with my older sister, and they came here. So what do I have to complain about?
What are you complaining about?
Yes. So I always think about those things are small compared to what my parents faced to be here. And so their advice has always reminded me, you got this. But if you're running into a situation that's an obstacle, that's very difficult, I'm meant to see it. So I'm reminded that.
That you're meant to see it.
I'm meant to go through it because it builds me as a leader, as a person, to help solve an issue or a problem. That's what keeps me going. And so now as mayor, I'm just like, wow, it's easier for me because as a staffer, I remember those, I really wanted to give it so many times. But as a mayor now, I'm like, let's go. I see this. What's next?
You and I share a big community of Vietnamese people in Orange County. We share that. We're not from Orange County. Sounds like you're from San Bernardino. I'm from LA. But we share this genetic imprint in Orange County. And what I want to talk about is the amount of money that's in Orange County. We see it. We know mm-hmm. it. They're very successful. What made your parents stay out here? And how did that affect how you think about your community? Because I'm sure, like, as Asians, we're like white adjacent, you know, we're privileged in some way, right? But San Bernardino is not that demographic that we know because you win every weekend, I win every week. We all go every weekend to Orange County.
Right.
And we get to experience like this lush, rich community. And when I think about San Bernardino, as I'm driving into it, I see the challenges. In the vacancies and sort of like the way the city's painted.
Right.
I can imagine what hardships you go through to uplift the city. So I want to know all about that. I want to know, you know, it sounds like a very tough job.
It is. I knew that when I decided to run. I knew that coming in as mayor is not going to be easy. It's not a cakewalk. It's not, you know, but you have to have someone who's willing to face the challenge, the obstacles, the toughness of the city, and say, we're not going to give up. We're just going to look at the situation, not let the noise or you know, things that are going to throw us off path from the greater work. Again, reminded by my parents all the time, look at the situation and how do you make it better? And my dad always tells me, turn that trash into something very beautiful that you can feel so good about and said, oh my God, it was once trash. Or it was once a huge rubble or once a blighted area and turn into something beautiful. And my dad has a green thumb. So he always transferred, look at this. I'm gonna turn this tough ground into something very beautiful. And he did. And so that's what I'm always telling myself. We're going to turn that around. We can do it.
Okay. I'm going to get into this idea of resources then, right? Yes. In order to turn something, no matter what a green thumb you might have, as somebody's touching the city and turning it green. But what if you're just not given the resources of, you know, an Orange County? Like you have a lot of prosperous things that are happening in that county, in that area. But what if San Bernardino is full of just rocks and pebbles and not a whole lot of like fertile ground? I don't know how to put that. I mean, I do, but I don't.
I think I know what you're saying. I can tell you this.
I want to remain respectful.
I understand. I can tell you this. Relationship is key. I can't do this as a mayor to turn a city that has so many challenges. It takes a team and relationship and collaboration.
But what if there's nothing here? Like there, it's
when
like,
you say nothing here, what do you mean?
There's no money. There's no industry. There's no... And this is for me. I'm an outsider. I'm coming in.
No, I understand. You know,
and I'm looking at things, and I'm just trying to. I look at the challenge. I'm like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed thinking about your position as a mayor. I'm like, there's no factories here. There's no restaurant. There's no vibrancy.
Well, that's what you say.
Yeah,
an outsider, and I appreciate you being very direct with me as the mayor of the city who sees it very different. We do have gems in our city that people don't see, and it's hidden. Very much like this Arrowhead Country Club is 101 years old. It's a gem. Look at this place and where it's located. I have to tell you, San Bernardino is the county seat. It has international airport. It has rail. It has transit. It has the structure and the bones. It has a downtown that will be once developed, because it's not there yet. It's a blank canvas. Once developed, it will be the largest downtown in the IE, Inland Empire.
That's like Riverside, too,
that is,
right?
But Riverside and San Bernardino used to be on the same level. Riverside took off.
Took off.
We didn't take off.
It took off.
Every city around us took off. We didn't take off. That's why I'm saying do not turn and walk away from San Bernardino. I see it. Everyone sees it. But they're to say, to me, it's leadership. It takes leadership to be willing to take this tough job and say, we could do this. Let's go. And so what I've done in my first term is to understand what's even more advantageous about me is that I understand the city internally, right? I was a staffer. I understand the inner workings of city government. I understand what it takes to facilitate process and development, right? So now as mayor, what I realize that I got to build a relationship with our county, with our state, with our federal, with our major stakeholders, our school, the large school district in the county of San Bernardino. And we have a university, Cal State. We have community college down the street too. So we have all of these assets and we have hospitals, healthcare. So I'm building relationships with everyone because you have to be someone who they want to work with. And I've done a great job with that. And so in my short period of time, I have helped brought in grant funds into the city, almost $300 million, okay, in just a few short period years. And also, we have invested more into infrastructure, streets, roads, like infrastructure investments, more in the last few years than the last 20 years. So it's having leaders who don't give up easily when it's very tough and challenged, when you just look at it like, that's a lot of work. Yeah. How do you do? Well, if you just take it piece by piece and work with the right folks, things can happen quickly. And it takes a body to it. So the mayor can't just do it. It's not a strong form of government. It's a council manager. So we went from strong mayor to a council manager form of government in 2016. But I don't believe the community understood
what that meant,
that transition, or never knew that that happened, or understand that there's a big transition there. So they still think that I, as your mayor, as the mayor, can wave the wand and boom, let's go. It used to be that way, but it's not. So it takes a body. And so I look at it and I don't have any issues dealing with people or working with people, whether you're difficult or not. It's just, how do I work with people, difficult people, people that you can work with, and just piece it all together and then work with staff. Yeah.
I went to UCR for one quarter before I went to USC. And I love UCR. I love that experience. Riverside has a very special place in my heart. How do you get San Bernardino to progress the way UCR or Riverside did?
So as a mayor, I work very closely with other mayors in the region. And Mayor Locke Dawson, which is Riverside mayor, she is actually the chair of the 13th largest city in the state. And they meet with the governor on a periodic basis. We are 226,000. You need to be 250,000 to have a seat at the table with the governor. We are going to be there.
Wait, and say that again? You are
so
what?
So we are 226,000 residents, right? Mm. If your city has 250,000 residents and above, you get to sit with the governor and have discussions about how to govern your cities, how do we bring resources, how do we make sure that we're working together statewide. We're not too far off. We will have a seat with the governor with other large cities. So how I see this is like, I need to make sure that the city's not missing out. So I'm all over the place. I go to I go to DC, Sacramento, I go to Boston, I go to, you know, different places to put San Bernardino on the map and ask for resources, ask for help, and to say, we need help. How can we move the city effectively? And I just recently, in my time as mayor, we implemented Love Your Block program. We are one of 16 cities that received this in the nation. This is through Bloomberg. And we received grant funds to work with the residents, to be resident-driven projects, to love your block and beautify your city. And we've done it successfully. And we're going to part two of it. I just met with them today. And so they flew out from DC and met with me today. They said, we have not seen a community successfully done this so well like your city. Because that is because we're all hands-on. You have a mayor who's really out there in the community working with the residents to improve their blocks.
I want to go back now to the specifics of how Riverside went from where they were to where they are now. What's that blueprint look like for San Bernardino when you don't have the money, the resources, the families, all the 250,000 families? How does that look when you don't? When I think about this, I think about Japan or the countryside of Italy when, you know, all of their people just move out of the city and all of a sudden you have like a barren, you know, barren land and there's no life inside of it. But that's not happening in San Bernardino, right? Like, how do you grow it?
It's happening, but they're most of the time, say my first term here, and I tell people, it may not happen that you see it. It's happening behind the scenes to create that structure in place, the foundation, right? If you don't have your household in order, if you don't have your city hall in order, if you don't have stability, you have leadership in place to drive results, how do you even do it? And I realized it took my first term to make sure all of these pieces are in place. And the public may not see it, but it's really just, I tell people, be patient. But the community said, well, we're seeing streets getting paved. We're seeing parks getting cleaned. We're seeing homelessness getting addressed. I said, well, good, you're seeing it. But there's more work to be done. But you also understand, I'm trying to help make sure there's stability internally in City Hall. And the body is focused on the work, right? The body of the council, we have 7 council members. And that takes time. So I came in with a lot of, there's a lot of dysfunction.
Yeah.
But again, I knew that. It's just I tell folks that I cannot be a mayor that get triggered by dysfunction or be part of that dysfunction. We gotta stay focused on the work. I got elected to drive results and create progress. And we've done that.
How do you as the mayor show your constituency progress? How do you create like a metrics? Is there like you know, is there like a textbook way to say, oh, here are the metrics of city improvement? Or is it abstract and people just kind of feel it when they walk in?
It's feeling.
What is it?
It's the feeling. It's seeing it and feeling it. So it has to be tangible. They have to see it. So if you're paving the streets, if you're cleaning up the parks, if you're addressing the homelessness encampments, if the blight, and they're simple things.
Mm.
For the local level, they just need to see it and feel it. They need to know that there's progress activity. You know, we opened the Mount Vernon Bridge that has been closed for, what, 5-6 years. And that's a major connector bridge for the west side of San Bernardino to all of San Bernardino. And the west side is known to be the most disadvantaged, community members through history, right? And that showed historically how folks were pushed out to be on the west side and red line or what have you. So those are things that we have to be mindful of history-wise. And how do we make sure that everyone feels like they matter? And so that takes leadership being out there, though. And so I'm very engaged mayor, and they have not seen that for a long, long time. And so for me to be out there constantly and touching folks where they're at, they're shocked. They're like, I can't believe the mayor's here. Checking in businesses, just walking and knocking on doors, just make sure, how are you doing? What is it that matters to you? And the two biggest things that residents say throughout the city, not just one area, streets. I just want my streets paved. I want my lights on. Make sure it's bright, lit. I want to make sure the homelessness are addressed because it's creating unsafe situations. And the parks are clean and we can go there. So they're basic things. So we have to be mindful. While that's happening, we can't take off the bigger component, which is downtown. That would be the economic boom for the city. We're the county seat. We're the largest county nation, landmass-wise, in the nation.
Wow.
Yes. We're 65 square miles. We're small. We're big. We're not small.
Wow, that's massive.
So if you were to drive around San Bernardino, you're like, oh my God, look at the foothills. I mean,
it's gorgeous.
They're different. And every part of San Bernardino is uniquely very different, culturally and just people. But what everyone has the same is heart for San Bernardino. They love San Bernardino. They're loving people.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
What are some of the key cool characteristics of San Bernardino?
Oh.
You grew up here and...
Yes.
I'd love to hear it.
Classic cars, lowriders, Route 66. Mm-hmm. So there's that and just... I mean, you have beautiful places like this, the Arrowhead Country Club. You have, we're the first place where the McDonald's originated here, was born here out of San Bernardino.
Oh,
the first
okay.
McDonald's. Yes. So the first McDonald's, Norton Air Force Base, this used to be a military town. So when the Norton Air Force Base shut down in the early 90s, that created the decline of San Bernardino. But now we're trying to build back up. We have an international airport that is now expanding, has passenger flights. So that is, and we have a casino here. Did you know the casino here, the tribal casino, Yamava, they are the second largest visitor place to go to next to Disneyland?
I did not know that.
No one knew that. Mm. It is the second largest visitor location destination next to Disneyland.
Shout out to Yamava. They sponsored the podcast at one point.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I always thought San Bernardino was very magical.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, Disneyland was supposed to be built in San Bernardino. Did you know that?
No.
See, there's this historical things, but we lost it to Anaheim. Matter of fact to you, Mayor. I know you, Mayor Ashley. so it's one of those things where we just realize, hey, there's missed opportunities, but that means that it creates more opportunities for us. We could be a destination for something else.
It's such a beautiful place. I mean, the foothills.
And when there's snow, oh.
There's actually snow here?
Well, 1 year, I thought I had to think about, you know, do I need to go invest in snowmobile? Like it literally poured snow into our city. It was a one-day thing. It was just rare. I think everywhere, we're just like, did I have to really think about snow plows or snow vehicles? But really, when the snow comes down, you just, oh, it's magical. Yeah.
You know, we're sitting at this Arrowhead Country Club, and I'm thinking about, like, you explained that it was used to be brown back here. And
oh, yes, it was all brown. This is when I was running, and they the owners did, I think, a kickoff to kind of open the Arrowhead Country Club. And
was anybody playing here? I mean,
when they took it over, it was just more of like, hey, you know, they wanted to, it's like a grand opening, right? Since them taking over, it has changed this place dramatically, and we do get activity, you know, players and events. And
yeah, so that's the question I have, right? That's the big mystery. When I think about a country club that's gone brown, how do you get people to come play? How do you get activity going? Where were the people all these years?
I have to tell you, since I've gotten to office, a lot of folks said downtown has more activity, more life than ever before, because before it was like dead.
So people were just sitting at home?
It was really...
And I'm trying to paint this picture.
It's so important.
Yeah. I'm trying to paint this picture. I think it was the broken window theory, mm-hmm. right? So when I think about the broken window theory, as it applies to the brown park theory or the brown country club theory, it's the small fixes that we do, right? Mm-hmm. It's the small details in the paint job or the paving of the
landscape,
streets,
the trees, everything. The flowers, everything. And I keep telling staff, as we build up and out our own city, an opportunity to really enhance our city in a very beautiful way, please don't forget the small things that matter, because when people come in, you have to make them feel good and they'll always remember it. Is the landscape clean? Is it green? Is it clean? Is it safe? And I have to tell you, our police department is doing such a banging job. We are low in the last 20 years, lowest for the last 20 years. 65% reduction in homicide, crime. I mean, it's huge during the short period of 3 years.
That is huge.
Yes.
I mean, there was, this was before your time, but I, as a mayor, I think there was a lot of drugs in San Bernardino.
There was a gang period with the 90s and all of that. And that still could be the case, but it's not as visible, right? So, but I tell you, this community has improved a lot.
I'm so glad to hear that. You know, a lot of politicians promise things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're running and you promise, and you know, in your heart, you really want to do it. But that doesn't always transpire, the things that you want to do. What causes politicians not to be able to carry these things out?
We're in the way of progress. When people say, what's my biggest challenge as mayor? I say, it's not the work. The work's easy. You can get anything done. But it's us who prevent it.
Who's us?
I say, because remember, it's not just me that it's the society, right? It's the body.
The city.
Elected body.
The people.
So you have 7 council members and then myself as mayor. I don't have the ability as mayor right now with the current charter to vote on anything to develop the city. I can only take whatever the council's direction is and
implement.
Advocate for funding, resources, and be the chief spokesperson of the city, right? So I will say, look, I can be influenced and say, hey, there's opportunities here. We should explore this. This is aligned to what we're trying to achieve, which is quality of life, right? Fix our streets, our parks, our infrastructure, develop downtown. So that's all I can do. So I always remind folks, like, look, I know you think that I could just, as an at-large mayor, but the charter did truly change in 2016 from a strong mayor, former government, who used to have that driving force, who used to say, this is what we're going to go down towards the path for. But that's not the case anymore. You have to understand that. And that I've done a lot of more educating than anything. And remember when I said I wanted to be third grade teacher? Mm-hmm. Now I can go to schools and speak and educate kids about government, about how local government matters, how leaders that you elect matters, how voter engagement matters. And so it's taking that information that kids need to know about, taking it home and say, wow, mom, dad, did you know? Brother and sister, if you're 18 years old and older, you can engage in trying to improve your community. But that takes about engagement. And that's why I always say that is so important.
I'm hearing a lot of things. If I was to put things into like a chart, and if I was you, I'd be like, okay, here's my priorities, here's my list. But there's no way to really, like in a concrete way, tackle all these things. So what is like the pyramid of priorities that you have as Helena Tran?
The priority is to continue to improve your community better than you started or you left it.
But I mean, what are the like the items, the action
is,
items?
I could tell you it's public safety is number one, making sure the city. Number one. Public safety, addressing homelessness. That's a crisis. We have a crisis. When I came on board as mayor, I declared a state emergency February 1st, and that still has been a case. So housing, homelessness and affordable housing, right? They're connected. Infrastructure, streets improvement, making sure that our infrastructure is up to date and that, you know, we're paving our streets, our lights are on, those types of things. And downtown. Downtown is the heart of the city because it's going to pump the major corridors with economic boom.
Wow.
Also on top of that, we have City Hall too. So how do you make sure your services that you serve the people are all in one place? Mm-hmm. Right now it's fractured. We have different spots because City Hall closed in 2017. And so now you have different departments in different places.
This is awesome to hear because I don't sit with mayors every day. Or I think you're probably the first mayor that I've, you know, Congress and senators and state reps for the most part for me. But this is interesting because when I look at a city, I don't think about all these things. And so I'm sitting here with you in San Bernardino thinking about, how do you take the city from where it's at right now to somewhere? And when I think about public safety, it seems so simple, but it sounds very, very complicated.
No, everything is complicated when it comes to very local because it is where you directly make impacts. And that's why I always say, please don't forget the local level because the local level is where you have direct decision-making on how you improve your everyday life, everyday community life, your quality of life. Right. So I always tell folks that please pay attention to your local leaders, engaging at your local level. Because if you choose to live in that city, live in that community, don't you want it to make sure that your life is thriving, that it's safe, that you get to shop, dine,
and not worry,
live,
safety?
Work? Yeah. And that's why it's so important that is your leaders striving for those things. And if they aren't, then that's where you have to exercise your power to vote. And so that's what propelled me to run because I just really believe that we could do better and we need to do a lot better and a lot of work ahead. And that's why I'm running for re-election coming up, which is in 40 days. It's counting.
But you're ready, right? I mean,
I'm ready. Like, I've always been ready.
Yeah.
To me, it's
you should
like,
be fine.
But I don't take my foot off the gas pedal.
What do you need? What do you need to win again?
It takes raising money to reach out to voters because you can't just say, I want to run for office and then think that it happens. It actually takes a campaign strategy to reach out to voters directly and to be out in front of the voters. And I've been out there every day just knocking on doors, going to spaces where to meet a lot of the residents and community, the businesses, and say, look, I'm here to serve. It's an honor to serve, but it will be a true honor to serve another term.
And how do you raise money?
Reaching out to folks. Will you donate and be part of this campaign journey to reelect me? Fundraising, you know.
All doable, right?
Doable, but you have to not be afraid to ask. Excuse me. As I always say, the money that I'm raising is not for my own pocket. Is for you to help me to reach out to voters to elect me if you believe in my leadership.
Right. There's a lot of mayors in Orange County that are Vietnamese. Do you ever, right? I mean, do you ever talk to them or get advice from what they do?
So I go into the mayor's spaces where we all convene, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. But I believe mayors in Orange County, they tend to be rotational mayors. So I'm at large where I'm full-time or, you know, you are overseeing the entire community. So I do cross path if we are in events together, But that's the only time what I would cross path, or I get invited, right? Because I am the first Vietnamese woman mayor, so I'll get invited.
So you've never met a Vietnamese woman mayor anywhere, anytime in your life?
No.
That is fascinating. All been men, all been Vietnamese men.
Correct. Correct.
And so you don't like, there's no phone calls like, hey, I need help or I need advice. Or...
I do that with generally in the region.
Yeah. So I'll but not call... like Vietnamese mayors.
No, not generally that I am aware of, but unless we were in spaces where it's API and Vietnamese and yes.
Interesting. Yeah. Because there's just a lot.
There's just so much.
Yeah, like I from here.
Yes. For me, Serendipity keeps me so busy. I don't even have sometimes to think about, I don't have to think about how do I solve this problem or come to a solution to move the city forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're doing a fantastic job.
I hope so.
Yeah. What's after you get elected, like 10 years from now, where do you see yourself as a leader in this country?
You know, I it's interesting because people say, oh, you're going to do something great and this is a stepping stone. I was like, well, I can't even think any of that because I truly did not believe I was going to run for mayor or ever be mayor. I ran because I truly care and love San Bernardino that gave me and my family an opportunity to live and thrive, right? So I just want to see San Bernardino boom. So once San Bernardino booms and San Bernardino is successful and it's beautiful, it's developed, then I'll say, let's talk about that because I don't even know and I don't want to engage in a conversation until my commitment is fulfilled.
That's a lovely answer. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm like, okay, if you do a great job, you turn around this place and it's green, it's luscious. Next time I come back in 2 years from now, it's like a beautiful feeling. What stops anybody from running for governor at that point, right? You turn that magic around into the state level and then...
Until that happens, though, then I'll talk about, we'll talk. Right. Because to me, I want to see results. Because if we can turn a city like San Bernardino, which is not an easy city to turn around, then we can talk about, okay, once that's done, then we can talk. Because at this point, I don't want to spend my energy thinking about it, talking about it until this is done.
Yeah, that's singular focus. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of Latinos that live in...
Yes, 70%.
Cities, 70%.
Yes.
And there's a Black population.
I think about 13%.
13%. How does that like work for... An Asian...
4%.
Say again, 4%? 4%. Yeah, how does that work? How do you look at you and go, you know, I trust her?
Because that takes work on my part. Mm-hmm. That takes showing up as a leader on my part.
Literally,
I'm showing up, I'm leading, I'm out there, I'm touching folks, I'm engaging with folks. That takes me proving myself. So I tell folks, like, look, I'm not running... Because I'm the first API, whatever the case is, race or whatever. Because I always say, we are all equal because we chose to live here. We chose it. So it's not party, it's not race, not religious, not any of that. It's because we chose San Bernardino. So I, as your mayor, want to lead the city to make sure everyone's thriving, that we are all thriving.
You know, I should have asked you this from the beginning, but what is the difference between San Bernardino County and San Bernardino, the city?
San Bernardino County is encompasses, I believe, 27 cities within the county. And the city is just the city itself. So we are the county seat. So we represent the county as a city, right? And we're the largest city in the county. So really, city and county are two different separate entities. The county has different funds. They have board supervisors who oversees that entity, and the city oversees the city. But again, within the county, there's 27 cities, right? So you have to be mindful. There's Fontana, there's Rialto, there's Redlands, there's Colton, there's Highland, there's Victorville. It goes all the way to Needles and Barstow. So that's the county jurisdiction with all the cities within that. So,
you know, I've always known that, but I've never heard it. You know, you always hear about San Bernardino County. You always hear about Rialto.
So, and then sometimes the media mistakes the city and the county because we share the same name, right? San Bernardino. Totally. So then I'm like, we get calls at the county. Like, oh, you have to go to the county. But I always tell staff, please help facilitate that. Don't just punt it. Don't say that, you know, you called the wrong place. Like, help facilitate because we want to build relationships.
Yeah, because Orange County it does have Orange, the city.
Yeah, Orange, state of Orange. But what's the main city for Orange County?
I mean, Anaheim.
Is it Anaheim?
I don't know. There's
what's the county seat?
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, so there's
explain that?
So the county seat is a designated city where the county functions out of. So we're the county seat, right? So all the county administration. So you could be dead. Like Sacramento, right? Yep. It's the capital of the state. Yes, you can say that. Yeah, it's the capital of the county.
How many people really know? Because I've been here for 50 years of my life. And this is the first time.
So you can say that. Yeah, it's like a capital of the county.
I did not know that because LA County has LA, but it probably what LA City.
It's probably LA City because, I mean, LA City is the largest city, right?
Got it.
Because Mayor Karen Bass is out of that.
That makes sense. it's just like common sense. So, yeah, 40 days. The allyship that I was talking about, you know, I think oftentimes our Vietnamese community, we don't see the value of the Black community. We don't see the value of the Latino communities. We only see the value of the white community as because the proximity to that is power. Mm-hmm. But how do we as leaders really reframe that?
Yep. We reframe that based on how we engage. And so for me, you know, I have staff. I have one full-time city staff, but I also have volunteer community liaison folks who really are my eyes and ears to let me know where do I need to be at as mayor to make sure that we're including folks into the journey of trying to make sure San Bernardino is thriving with them, right? I always say, look, I'm open. You just got to reach out to me. Let me know you want to sit down with me and just talk about how do we move the city forward together. And so it's really having that engagement and saying that, hey, I want to make sure you guys are all factored in or at least be part of the journey and the process of building and developing our city, right? And so it's being open to that and not being closed off. And so if I do come across closed off, let me know because I want to make sure I'm mindful and aware about myself as a leader. Because remember, I serve everyone, 226,000 lives. I'm not serving just a few. And the west side of San Bernardino has always felt like they've been neglected. And so I would always let the council member know, hey, be mindful, like engage with the city manager to make sure that we are factoring in development in your side and that you have a Starbucks, that you have a bank, that you have all of these things that you know, everyday resident needs, right? So it's more of trying to have a conversation and dialogue constantly. And I was like, hey, did you check into that? Did you follow up with the council member? Did you follow up with the community member about these things that they are struggling?
Yeah, you and I met at an AAPI, I think it was on a Sunday. You stopped by and made an appearance.
Oh, yes.
With this event that I thought was, I thought it was really wonderful that you showed up because, you know, the people that were there were, I think, formerly incarcerated.
Right.
People.
Given a second opportunity. And so I really believe in second chance. I really believe in giving folks opportunities to redeem themselves or prove themselves or given the resources to be successful, right? Because, you know, I am a true believer when you give them the right resources and the right path, anything can happen and they could break the cycle of what has caused the struggles of communities like San Bernardino, yeah. Right? And not let that feed into the systemic issues that we've always been faced with or seeing.
I want you to commit when you run for California governor that you're going to call me and we'll do this in a few years or sit. And JT will be texting me on the side. JT is like...
He is my right-hand person in the community. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, JT, for that. with hope. And we're going to call it here, right? So in a few years, you'll be running for California governor. And I'm going to be fighting for something like an hour. JT, remember, I'll be fighting for an hour of your time to talk about that race. So everybody, thank you for tuning into the Vietnamese podcast. Mayor Helena Tran, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you. No, you're welcome. It's been an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.